everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin. We're back in the Spooky Bestie series. So I'd like to welcome back, you know her, you love her, the one and only co-host of MTP, Jules. Jules, what's up?
Hey guys, it's me, it's Jules, just Jules, here to talk about one of my favorite movies, one of my nostalgia movies, one of those just curl up with a blanket on a gloomy day and just feel good. Totally normal and typical that it's a horror movie, you know,
Of
that doesn't
course.
speak to us or anything like that. But I'm so excited. I've been loving this series, us alternating every other month and picking one of our personal faves or something new we want to watch. So I'll go ahead and reveal the spooky bestie pick for March 2025 is, I'm going to drum roll. And there we go, drum roll. Ghost Ship from 2002, just to be clear, because there is one from 1952, same name, unrelated. So it's an
Oh, wow.
unrelated movie. Yeah, I thought that was interesting because I was like, isn't there another movie called Ghost Ship? Assuming it was some sort of a remake. And apparently it is unrelated to this 2002 film Ghost Ship that we're going to be discussing.
Gotcha. Wow, 2002. Woo,
Do you feel
lifetime
old
ago.
yet? Do you feel old? You want to talk about how I remember the theatrical trailer in the movie theater and getting so pumped for this? Because guess what? This came out the year after one of my other favorites, 13 Ghosts.
Yep.
So I just really equate these movies in that same time period of early 2000s in my mind. There are some really good horror that came out of those early 2000s. And that movie, 13 Ghosts and Ghost Ship, are right at the top of that list for me every time.
Well, it makes sense too, Jules, that you equate these together because this episode we're doing seems like a spiritual successor to an episode that you, myself, and Katie did last year of 13 Ghosts, because this is the same director as 13 Ghosts.
This makes sense. You know what's funny? When I was doing research and preparing for this, I was like, oh, Kevin will look at all that technical stuff. So that's amazing. I did not realize that it is the same director, and that makes perfect sense because it has, like I said, that same spot in my heart. And I've come to realize recently, I think one of my top horror subgenres is ghost and supernatural. I have come to
Yeah.
realize that because think about 13 Ghosts, Ghost Ship, The Conjuring series. You know, give me a good ghost story any day of the week and I'm sold.
Yeah, so this guy, Steve Beck, these according to Wikipedia, this is the only these are the only two films he did was 13 Ghosts and Ghost Ship.
Oh, I need to find, is this person still alive? Can we please contact this person and try to get him on the show? Because only two films, two of my favorite films.
I would love to talk to this guy because talk about, two hits for the price of one. But he
Yeah.
also did visual effects for The Hunt for Red October and The Abyss and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Heck yeah.
So
That's
very, very talented
quite a
guy.
resume. Yeah, for sure. I would love to pick his brain because I love both of these movies so dearly. And it's our favorite length. I always have to mention the length of a movie because it's an hour and a half, like almost on the dot. I don't know why when you get to 2+ hours, I'm just like, it feels like I'm signing up to sell a piece of my soul away or something. But an hour, when I see 90 minutes, I'm like, this is amazing. This is a, you know, just an easy watch. So for those of you who like a little bit shorter of a movie, this is a great one.
So can we talk real quick about you talked about your memory of the theatrical three that theatrical trailer. I cannot talk tonight.
It's okay. You're
Theatrical
that
trailer.
excited about this movie.
100%. Theatrical trailer for this movie. Going down the nostalgia rabbit hole, I think I mentioned this on 13 Ghosts, but going back to the Blockbuster days, this is a cover I
Oh.
saw every single time I went to Blockbuster. This movie case cover is iconic.
I don't even have to close my eyes. It's burned, it's seared into my brain. It is the ship with the skull on it.
Yep.
And you want to go deeper than that, y'all who know what DVDs are, okay? When I got this, because I still have it on DVD, it had this awesome, like, I don't want to say 3D, but it was one of those, it had like a layer of film over it where when you would move the case back and forth, it kind of like shimmered and like looked like it moved a little bit. So like,
Yes.
man, you know, like the old school days where DVDs were art. So love, love, love that. And I'm so happy you brought that up because it is absolutely seared into my brain as well.
Yeah, and I never watched this growing up for some reason. I walked past this cover so many times and only just saw this maybe 5 years ago, like during COVID time.
Meanwhile, like a good, let's see, how old was I when this came out? Barely over 10. I was probably like in middle school or something. Saw it right away because that's how my dad raised me. So just fell in love with it instantly. It had, I think it was like a $20 million budget or so, and I think it made at least three times that in the theaters, which was awesome. So it did well, even though a lot of people just hated this movie, hated it, apparently. But I just don't see how you can. I always think it comes back to people just like taking things too seriously. Y'all, it's just a spooky ghost story on a ship, a big, beautiful ship. And I love this visually, but before we jump ahead of ourselves too much into the plot and stuff, let's talk about the cast list because I am so excited by the people in this movie. You have Juliana Margulies as Epps. You know her from ER. That's probably one of her biggest roles. She was also in The Mists of Avalon, y'all. Okay. Please check that out. That was a made-for-TV movie when I was growing up. And it goes into King Arthur and the lore there. So, super cool movie. You have Carl Urban as Munder,
Yes.
right? I fell in love with this man at such an early age, and it was because of Lord of the Rings. Okay, he was in Lord of the Rings. I loved him. He was one of those horse soldiers. And I just loved him so much. And then you have Desmond Harrington as Jack, absolutely amazing in this role. I don't want to give away too much yet, but absolutely amazing. And then I wanted to shout out to Emily Browning as Katie, who's the little girl. I have loved her. I think one of the first things I saw her in other than this was Lemony Snicket.
I was hoping
And
you were going
she
to say
Yes. Oh
that.
my gosh. I love that movie. I'm a
Me
Jim
too.
Carrey nerd, though. So,
Love it. And yeah, Carl Urban, almost, I did not recognize him when I rewatched this.
right? He, like, looking at him in Lord of the Rings, long, blondish, dirty, I guess, blondish hair. And then in this looks totally different. And then nowadays, what show is he in right now that's so popular? There's The Boys, maybe. There's some show that he's in right now that is so super popular that I haven't watched yet. But again, totally different, short, like dark hair. So he is absolutely a chameleon in that way. But such a great actor, so versatile, and his character in this movie is a lot of fun.
I also forgot that Gabriel Byrne is in here too.
So, I mean, you could go on. There's also Isaiah Washington from Grey's Anatomy. It's really such a good cast. So that alone is worth mentioning and highlighting. And then I don't know if there's any other actors you want to mention, but I also wanted to just mention the opening. I love it so much. The music, the colors, the bubbles of the water. It just is so inviting instantly. And then it leads into one of the coolest, in my humble opinion, death scenes in any horror movie of all time. But again, I love this movie. So.
Oh, we've got so rightfully so. We give a lot of credit to Scream for being one of the best openings in horror.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, but this one is right up there.
Yep.
Like, people that barely know this movie know this opening.
Yep, you can't forget it. It is haunting, it's horrifying, it's sad, it's brilliant, it's unique. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about from behind the scenes, but we can dive right into that opening scene if you want to.
Yeah, I think so. Again, shame that this guy Steve Beck didn't direct more, because I think he's very talented. I love his style of filmmaking. I like the word you use there, inviting. It's colorful, it's vibrant, it's lively. And I also just have a note here that just says this movie is so 2000s, and I love it. The filmmaking style, the fast pace, There's a Mudvayne song that's playing, and
Yes.
one of the shipmates
The
is singing
music from the late
it.
90s, early 2000s. I'm so glad you brought that up. There is a rock and roll metal edge to the movies that came out around that time, and I love, love, love that.
I think I saw that there might have been like a soundtrack too to this movie, which is pretty awesome.
Gonna have to go buy that later tonight. Probably just be cruising down Charleston, blasting the Ghost Ship soundtrack.
Pun intended with cruising.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, not at all. So good catching that. That was a good one.
Oh, it looks like there's a score, but no soundtrack, but there should be. But either way, the score from this, the movies or the music is very eerie as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess a good place to start with the plot is I just want to gush for a minute about how much I love this setting of an abandoned ship.
Yes. Well, just like 13 Ghosts, the house.
Yep.
It's gorgeous, the glass house. This, you have an ancient ship. It's instantly haunting. It's abandoned, it's falling apart. It's in the middle of the Bering Strait, just on its own. It's just haunting, it's creepy. There's so much to explore visually throughout this entire movie. So totally agreed. That's a huge pro of this movie.
Yeah, and just the, so we have the opening with which if people don't know, obviously we'll dive into details, but the opening kill of like just somebody maneuvering a wire that then slides across the entire ship of wealthy people and slices them in half, except for young Katie. She's left alone on the ship, which by the way, I gotta ask, because we don't have your Katie on this episode, but did you guys watch this together?
Oh yeah. Oh, pretty much every horror movie from birth to maybe early college, Katie was probably there. So yeah,
Okay.
she's a big fan of this one too. And yeah, it's worth mentioning Katie, again, who's played by Emily Browning, the only reason she survives that is because she's a child and she's short, so the wire goes over her, but it doesn't miss the captain she's dancing with who slices his head.
Ugh.
Just imagine, I mean, it's like a steel wire that is so it's basically wound up so tight when it's released, the pressure from it, the force from it just slices everybody. And it's so funny when I watched it today, I remember this being such a long scene, and it really wasn't. It was like 5 minutes, maybe 5 to 10 minutes tops. I think it was closer to five. So I was like, oh wow, this is that haunting and that effective of a scene that my entire life I've been remembering it being so long and drawn out. But no, it's just that effective that short of a scene will stay with you. So I think it's worth watching just for that scene alone.
Oh, yeah. But then just the setup of, they are. I forget what their term is, but they're salvagers, this group of people. They
Yep.
go to rescue like broken down ships.
Yep.
And we meet it's Jack that approaches them with a deal, right? To go have them get this
Yep.
lost cruise ship.
Yep. So it's like a team, a very intimate team of salvagers. And it seems overall, I'm not a salvager myself. So, but from my limited research, basically, it seems like vessels that have just been in the water and abandoned probably for a certain amount of time, it's fair game. So if you're the one that goes out and brings it home, it's yours, and that includes everything on it. So, yes, Jack is this seeming to be random civilian who approaches the salvage team at a bar. They look like they're all there just as a family. You get that family vibe instantly within like the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie. They're a family, they're best friends, they're close. Even Murphy, who's like the captain of the salvage crew, Epps, who is Juliana Margulies, obviously that is like a daughter type of a figure to him. So very, very close team. So they're skeptical at first of this random man approaching them, and they make a deal though to because Jack said that there's this boat basically out in the Bering Strait, ocean liner from 1962 that we will find out the name here in a little bit. That's abandoned, and they want to salvage it, bring it in, and split all the money. So that's kind of how we get going, is accepting that offer, and then the adventure begins. They go off to find what we then find out pretty soon after is the Antonia Graza is the name of the ship.
Yes, and love the set up here with the sonar radar that's picking up something in the water, and then the ship just appears, disappears until they run a course to it.
That's kind of like clue number one, something's afoot when like the radar is picking something up and then it's not, and then it is, and then it's not. It's like, this is already giving supernatural vibes a little bit. But they do find it, they roll up on it, and then my notes say their job is to repair the boat, and then all hell breaks loose from there.
Yes. And can I just go ahead and say again, I had only seen this once before. I actually didn't remember what the reveal was of why the ship is the way it is. But straight up, this movie scared the shit out of me rewatching it. It is so creepy.
Well, I actually have notes on all of the deaths that
Okay.
I thought we could talk about, because essentially that's the plot, right? The whole movie is them trying to repair this boat. At first, they're trying to repair it, so they're thinking they can tug it home, right? But then one of the first deaths of the movie, the boat's damaged in an explosion. So then the goal becomes, let's just repair the ship itself and try to ride the currents to get home. So that is the whole focus of this movie, is repair the boat for one reason or another, repair the ship. But that very first death is, he appears to be kind of like the mechanic on the crew. His name is Santos, and supernatural vibes here. Something happens on the tugboat of the salvage crew that leads to an explosion, and he's basically exploded into the water, and that's your first death right there. And it just spirals from there. So I thought it would be fun to kind of talk about the deaths and which ones kind of, they're all disturbing and haunting in their own way. But there's a lot of good ones. And one of my top, I think, favorite things about this movie, reflecting on it, is how cool all the different deaths are. It's not the same. It's not like your typical slasher where you're getting axed or stabbed or all of the same things over and over again. Every single death is something different.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a nice thing to juggle too, because a lot of my notes deal with the scare setups, because really the first half of the movie is a lot of scares. And then from there, I mean, the deaths really don't even show up until like 45 minutes into the movie, and then after that it's go, go, go. Which is interesting, because normally these days you're like, oh, you start off with which they do start off with a mass death scene. But they're like, oh, you got to get to the kills faster. But there's a lot of dread that's set up here first.
There's a lot of, I called them clues in my notes, that it's a supernatural experience is occurring. Like when Epps, the leading lady, sees the ghost child, who we now of course know is Katie. So we meet Katie at the beginning of the movie while she's still alive, and then we see her again as a ghost. So that was one of the kind of first big clues, other than the radar, that there's something afoot, is Epps starts seeing her Katie's ghosts all over the place.
Oh, yes. This was, I believe, the pool jump scare, right? Is where she saw
Oh,
her.
yeah, she saw her. I think one of the first times was, if you remember, Munder, who is Carl Urban, falls through. That was right after the captain was like, watch out for rust, it's like quicksand. And then
Yep.
Munder straight through the floor. And then she catches this quick little glimpse of Katie. And
That's right.
then sees her again at the pool. So she keeps having these little sightings where she's feeling not sane, you know. And then there's other clues that start popping up that just, to me, lead to the feeling of something's afoot. Like they find, keep in mind, this boat is from the 60s, and then they find a digital watch. You find something digital,
Oh,
that means
yeah.
someone has been there. So there's all these little clues that kind of start creeping up, like what you're saying, for the first half of the movie, that's leading to that first kill of Santos being exploded into the water. And then, not gonna lie, y'all, everyone dies, basically. Almost everyone dies. And I feel like that's kind of typical for some horror movies, where most of the main characters die. But again, that's where all those cool deaths come into play. But let's talk about some more of those build up moments and the scares that happen before that.
Yeah, and this is not really a scare, but it goes back to that setting. There's something that really put me on edge with the idea that it's an abandoned ship. So whenever these characters speak, their voice just echoes throughout the whole ship. So that, set a lot of dread. Probably the scare that got me the best, was when I think it was the captain goes like into the captain's quarters and like looks into a mirror or past a mirror, and the ghost captain showed up smiling.
And I also thought this was an interesting detail. Murphy is the tugboat, the salvage crew captain. He apparently, this is such a small detail that's mentioned at the very beginning, he does not drink alcohol. So I'm assuming he's a recovered alcoholic. And whenever Murphy sees the captain's ghost, he's grabbing his alcohol. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit. Almost like a, do you want to do that? Like, do you want to do that kind of a thing? Because keep in mind, not all of the ghosts, I would actually say most of the ghosts on this ship are not there to harm you. Most of them are innocent souls. So the captain seemed to me like a very good-hearted person because he was the one who was dancing with Katie at the very beginning of the movie when he got sliced and diced. So he, but it's still very ominous. You know, it's a ghost. Even if it's like a friendly ghost, it's scary. It's scary. So, absolutely, that was creepy.
Well, I have a at the end of my ghost captain note, I just have a note that I'm trying to recall what I'm talking about. It says, as I'm writing this, the pool of blood scene with the bodies just happened. Fuck.
So, that was where, it was Epps fell into that and knocked her head, I believe. And then the pool, this is what's so creepy, the pool like sucked her blood away too. So it's
Oh,
just like the
yes.
whole ship just seems like a demonic entity almost at this point because it's so haunted. And probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people have died on this ship at that point. But yes, this kind of goes into some of those other iconic kills because, again, what I love too is you're not just getting these really cool, unique deaths from the crew, the salvage crew. You also get, as you continue and you learn more about the history of the ship, there's a lot of really unique kills for the guests of the ship from the 60s who are all ghosts there now. So going into that pool scene, where Epps, and it's worth noting before we go any further too, it's one of those supernatural experiences where I don't know if it's one person controlling it, if it's just all of the ghosts or the boat itself, but visions happen. Reality is altered constantly in this movie. So you'll be thinking you're talking to one person, it's not actually that person. You have visions of things that have happened on the ship. There's lots of times where they almost go to the past, but they're not really in the past. It's a vision of the past. So there's lots of that blurred reality that happens throughout this movie. So the pool is one of those moments where you catch a glimpse of what happened in the 60s to all of these guests on this cruise ship. So, not to give too much away till we get kind of towards the end, but basically a whole bunch of people are shot and fall into a pool. So all of that water in the pool is a bunch of blood and there's bullet hole marks. And so Epps is in there like, this is, so I feel like that's the first moment where someone's like, this ain't good. This is really not good. There's something that has happened here that is very terrifying.
And you're talking about that time travel element. Anytime that Francesca's singing voice comes over the walkie-talkie, the hair like stood up for me. That is so eerie and creepy.
Yes. Let's talk about Francesca. So that's the
Oh,
singer.
please.
So Francesca, she's the singer from the 60s on the cruise line. You can't have a cruise ship without a singer, guys, okay? And she does not disappoint. One of the number one rules from horror from about the 70s to the early 2000s, you gotta have boobs, y'all. You gotta have boobs in every horror movie. You end up seeing Francesca's body, which I will give a 10 out of 10. You get her boobs, but also there is a mural behind her singing of a woman so with her titties out. So you get titty in art and then you get titty in the actress. I'm like double titty right there. You can't beat it. So shout out to Francesca.
Absolutely. Which jumping around a little bit. She's involved in probably my favorite death scene, which is when what's his name? Greer, when he's being lured by her and is kind of seduced by her, and he goes to kind of like be close to her, and he falls down the elevator shaft.
Yep. And I wanted to point this out too. I'm glad you brought that up. There is some foreshadowing about Greer's death. Very, it's just such a short moment earlier in the movie. He looks down that very same elevator shaft. So Homeboy knew it was there. And he also has a partner already. He's in a committed relationship. And Francesca, Ghost Francesca, lures him over to the shaft and then disappears. So whenever he's leaning in towards her, Homeboy falls to his death. And there's a bunch of like, what, irony spikes or something down there? That is gruesome. That is gruesome. And then sadly, his dead body is found like with the picture of like his partner. So that was sad. But that is one of those another one of those unique deaths.
Well, tying into that and the captain who seems to have, a previous alcohol problem, one of the things I noted rewatching this is I just love the layout of the movie where each character has to combat almost their own ghosts. Which there's a kind of a nice tie-in to that when you realize what's actually going on. But like, you don't expect that for a lot of like 90-minute horror movies where every character gets significant character development, but they all do.
Yeah, and I think a part of that is feeling how big this cruise ship is. It's so big. You have the small team of people, this family that's all spread out throughout the ship and can't even hear each other because it's so big. You can't even hear the screams as you're dying because they're all spread out. So it leads to that haunting feeling of the isolation of this desert. I'm obsessed with abandoned things. It's so just creepy instantly, like old malls, old Chuck E. Cheese's. Y'all go to YouTube right now and look up abandoned Chuck E. Cheese's and movie theaters. Fascinating. So throw in an old ass cruise ship, I am sold.
I think there's a lot of scares I noted. It's a joke, but the bodies in the meat freezer jump scare got me pretty good, where it's just Carl Urban and the other guy just wanted to play around. But there's a door slamming scene. Not really a jump scare, but the maggots that jump that are in
Oh.
their beans.
You gotta mention that. So again, going into like these visions and you don't know what's real and not, they're stranded at this point. So they're eating whatever they can find on the ship. And I think it was Munder, Carl Urban, who takes the first bite, and Dodge, the blonde, is looking on like, how is it? And he's like, oh man, this is good. So they both start pigging out, chowing down. And then I don't know what happens if that whole time it was a mirage, maybe, and it was actually maggots, but they definitely had been munching on maggots. And then I think it was one of them had a little maggot hanging out of their mouth, and the other's like, oh, what's that? And then they realize it's a bunch of maggots, and their whole mouths are full of maggots. So definitely creepy. What I also thought about that scene you mentioned with Munder and Dodge, where they pop out and it's just them pretending to be ghosts, that's right after Epps realizes they need to get out of there, because Epps is in the scene where they find all the fresh bodies that are not from the 60s, because she goes a few months, maybe less. So that's when they figure out, oh crap, there is something, there's crimes that have happened here. We need to get out of here. So she's going to find everyone, and then Munder and Dodge, being the assholes they are, scare her. And little do they know, they should all be very scared.
And I guess I also had a note here that I said the skeleton in Katie's closet literally scared the shit out of me. Trying to remember what that was. That a skeleton that fell out of the closet is what happened with that?
So this is actually, to me, the saddest death, because it's a child's death. So the skeleton in the closet, at first I was like, oh my God, Katie hung herself because she was the only person left alive. I researched this, and again, we'd have to probably ask the writers what they intended, because I don't think it's super explained, but based on research, it seems no, she did not kill herself. The crew members forcibly hung her and killed her in her closet of
Oh
her
my God.
stateroom on the boat. So that is actually Katie's body.
Ugh.
Yeah,
Well, that
so
makes it
that to
even more
me,
scary.
Yeah, I know, because it's a child, an innocent child. So, I mean, I'm relieved though that she didn't have to take her own life and didn't have to. Can you imagine? Talk about the ultimate horror. You're on a ship, you're the only child, and every single adult is either dead or there to hurt you and kill you. So I was almost relieved that that little girl didn't have to kill herself, because that's just, no one should have to be forced into that at all. So, yeah, I have a little note. It says, Katie hung by crew, sad face. Because that's
Oof.
just super, super sad. But Katie, I think she gravitates towards Epps throughout the whole movie. I don't know if it's because it's the other female or what it is, or if she's just sensing something. But Epps is the one who keeps seeing Katie over and over again. And Katie kind of takes Epps on this vision quest, if you will, to kind of show her what else has happened in the ship's past, which why don't we get into that in a minute? But let's talk about, are there any more scares that got you? And then if not, let's dive into the other deaths before we go into the big plot reveals of what happened.
Sure. So I think the again, I watched this a little bit ago, so I'm going just off my notes here. But yeah, I believe the skeleton popped out of the closet at Epp, so that got a scare out of me. Going a little bit lighter, I think that's all my scares, but I did write down one line that made me chuckle. Is this Munder and Dodge that have the whole conversation about what they're gonna do with the gold, and they say one of them says, "I'm gonna buy you a lifetime supply of titty magazines and toilet paper."
Oh yeah, again, titties, gotta have it. Yep, that's them. Their relationship is fun. They're obviously like brothers, best friends. The other thing real quick before we dive into the other kills going into the visions is and we've talked about Greer's death, how he falls into the elevator shaft, but leading up to that, there's a vision. It shows you what the ballroom looked like back when Francesco was singing. So he's having this vision, and it's just, again, such beautiful art. And if you've ever been on a cruise, I know there's a lot of cruise nerds in my life. It's just really cool to see all that kind of stuff, the 60s cruise liner vibes. So you do get to catch a glimpse of what this ship looked like in the 60s throughout the movie, which is cool.
And so yeah, I think we're at a good place to dive into how each character meets their demise, 'cause that again ties into the narrative. But yeah, that's a plot point to note, is that some of the characters have found some gold bars on the ship.
Lots of them. There's multiple trunks full of gold, pure gold bars that they find. And this obviously, at one point, they're like, fuck the ship. Let's just get out of here and take the gold. But then going back to Santos, we'll start back here because that was the first death. The boat explodes and he dies in that explosion. So that doesn't become an option anymore to just peace the fuck out and take the gold. They have to get out of there with the entire ship. They have to repair it. It's taking on water. It's literally sinking. So they're doing welding, they're diving, they're trying to get this boat in working order after losing their first crew member. And the other ones we've already talked about, we talked about Greer. He's the one who falls to his death and lands on some spikes or something similar in an elevator shaft. And then poor little Katie was hung by the crew, which is obviously evil at this point. So we'll get into the plot a little bit more in a minute. Because at this point, you don't know how are all these kills happening, what's going on. So we'll keep that suspense going for y'all too until the end. So basically, I mean, the movie is just chock full of kills because almost the whole crew dies. And then you're also learning as the plot progresses what happened to all of the hundreds, if not thousands, of guests from the 60s. So there is a lot of death to cover in this movie, and they do so, I think, really beautifully. But the other crew deaths, so Murphy, the captain of the tugboat, he unfortunately meets his demise. He has a vision that he sees Epps as somebody who she is not and becomes aggressive. So they worry that he's not safe and he's kind of losing his mind. So they lock him in the biggest frickin' aquarium you could ever imagine, which totally makes sense for a cruise ship. Lock him in there and leave him, kind of as like a little prison cell almost, like keep him safe, like till we get back to land. And you can imagine what happens when you're locked in an aquarium. Somebody turns the water on and
Oh,
that
that's
man
right.
drowns. And talk about
Ugh.
haunting. Again, Epps and Murphy, father and daughter vibes. That's what I get throughout the whole movie. So Epps is the one that finds him just floating and dead in the aquarium. So that's a very haunting image for me too.
Well, again, it's kind of and we'll keep the suspense going, as you said, but everybody's death as you're picking it up is tied to some sort of character flaw. Like Greer is tied to lust. The captain is like he's got an alcohol problem, so he drowns in some other form of liquid. Katie's an innocent child. She had her life taken by a different different people, unfortunately. So it's kind of like there's a, if you're watching it for, however many times, you start to notice like, oh, there's like a trend here with some of their deaths.
Yes, at this point, it's seeming like whatever force this is, whatever supernatural force, it almost wants you to sin. It wants you to sin. And we'll find out in just a little bit why that is. But let's see. Epps, spoiler alert, she lives. So that's our leading lady. So that's exciting. We have at least one survivor. And she really actually ends up being the only survivor, unfortunately, from the crew. So I can't imagine how that feels. To have lost your professional work team, your family, your best friends, your father figure. Like, I wish we could have a sequel to see where Epps ended up now. I hope she's like living her badass life, like a lady pirate on the sea, still living out the vision of the crew. But we'll just have to wonder. But she does live. So other deaths, we have Munder, Carl Urban. Unfortunately, when he's diving and welding and repairing, he gets sucked into some gears and literally like ripped to shreds. And
Oh
I
my God.
remember Epps looks down in the water and it's like his front of his face, like it looks like Leatherface cut his face off and placed it down at the bottom of water for her to look at, basically. So that's super, super creepy. And then this is kind of, I think, getting into where we might can go into kind of more of the main plot and the history of the ship, because Dodge, who is the blonde, he's killed off screen. You don't really know what happens, but he is killed by the person that ends up being this force that we've been up against this entire movie. He is killed by none other than Jack, who is the guy who originally proposed the offer to salvage the ship in the bar at the very beginning of the movie. So this random civilian they've taken on this whole salvage mission with them is actually what seems to be some sort of demonic spirit, evil spirit, something that is not good. And he talks about how he lived a life of sin, and this is his job that he does in the afterlife, basically. So all of these deaths, all of the people get stamped with what looks like a brand. It's like a scarring brand. It's like a fish hook or something similar. So once these souls, so all of these souls, and we'll talk about how the guests in the 60s died next, but all of these souls, the current day crew, the 60s, the random people that they found that died 3 months ago, every single soul that died on this ship is part of Jack's mission of meeting a quota of souls to take to hell, basically.
Yes, and it is at this moment where I picked up, because again, I hadn't seen this in years and I could not remember what the reveal was, but this is like a play on like the River Styx mythology, like what is it, Greek mythology, where this happens. And you look at Jack, his last name is Ferryman.
And they literally talk about souls being ferried into hell, basically.
And
So.
so, like, the idea, and again, he's transporting souls to hell, making people sin. So the idea that he is like a former sinner damned to a lifetime of bringing people to hell and making them, unleash their dark side is like when you realize, when I realized that that's what the ghost ship was, I was like completely blown away by that reveal. I don't even know if I, when I watched this, I might have been watching it with like a couple friends and not really paying attention because I did not remember this at all. So this reveal was like mind-blowing to me, and
Yeah.
Jack was just not on my radar at all.
No, he's really not. He's really, really not, because he's in the thick of it a lot of the times. Like when they're, oh my gosh, there's dead bodies and this and that, you know? So you're like, oh my gosh, this poor man. He's even pretending to get seasick and he's a damn spirit. So talk about an actor, seriously. He has everybody fooled. But yeah, so essentially this has all been him. And they even talk briefly about there was a ship before this. So it seems like Jack goes ship to ship and uses that vessel to trap as many souls as he can, to send them to hell. So basically leading into the crew from the 60s, now you know Jack is a ghost. He was there in the 60s too. He was the one that helped lead that initial murder scene with the wire just ripping everyone to shreds. So what it seems like happened was when he boarded the Antonia Graza, he basically convinced the crew, because there's gold, and you know what gold does and money, y'all, it turns people. So the crew was in on this with him, because they had a whole, imagine a carnival cruise ship, okay? And you have to kill everybody on that ship. That's a lot of people. You need more than one man. Maybe the right man could do it, but Jack needed some help, so he enlisted the crew. So this is where the other interesting deaths come in. We already talked about the opening scene, you know, about the wire. We talked about the bloody pool water where they just mass killed a bunch of people, just shot them to bits, and they fell into the pool. Two other kinds of kills that I noticed. The kitchen staff, because again, the crew's in on it, they were putting rat poison in the soup. So a lot of people
Yes.
were killed at dinner, which is my favorite part of a cruise. That would be my worst nightmare, would be dying after I ate. I wish I could enjoy that for at least a couple hours, but you know, whatever. And then the scariest one of all is the crew members were just walking through the hulls of the ship, slicing people's like throats with razor blades. So I thought it was just really impressive that he had this whole team of people just killing in all of these different ways all at the same time. It was like literally all hell breaks loose.
Well, it's even sad too, because he corrupts a select few with the sin of greed to make them do this, and then the other souls that like Katie and other innocent people were just stuck on the ship now because that's where they died, and
Exactly.
they died unnatural deaths. So it's a real, again, lot more emotional depth than I think people might that I think people might not have picked up on when they saw this.
Yeah, for sure. And then the plot thickens, right? Because at this point, you still don't quite know it's Jack, but you just see this man. It's the end of everyone's killed, you know, all the guests are killed, and they're coming and into the room with this amazing old Jaguar, the car, and all the gold, and he's coming in there, and it's like the end of the mission. The crew turns on each other. Duh, obviously there's gold involved. They get greedy. So now all the crew is dead. Even the head of the crew is killed by Francesca. She's in on it, right? And then you think, oh my, well, hold on, let me back up. Whenever Francesca kills and you realize, oh my God, it was Francesca this whole time. Oh wait, no, it wasn't. Here's a man coming in and it is Jack. That's when you realize it's right at the end of all of this. You literally are kept in suspense probably till the last 20 minutes of the movie that it is, you don't know who it is. And then you realize it's Jack, and they do a very long scene where, you know, there's this man interacting with Francesca and then turns around and you're like, oh my God, it's been him this whole fucking time. But wait for it. He turns on Francesca. And this is, to me, also, I mean, there, how many deaths are we at now? Like 2,000? How do you
So
pick?
many.
How do you pick? But this one is absolutely, I will call it beautifully haunting, because I've really, as I've gotten older, tried to find beauty in these horrific death scenes and just artistically how they did this as a creative team. And poor girl, she's gorgeous, right? So she gets a big industrial hook that could probably haul multiple cars straight to the jaw, and it hooks her and she's hanging. She's just
Ugh.
hanging by her jaw with a hook that, of course, Jack did. So at the end of the day, who's behind all of this? It is Jack. It is him.
Indeed. And yeah, this movie is so gory, which again, we praised this on the 13 Ghost episode, but props to whoever the makeup team is for this and 13 Ghosts, because the look of the ghosts and the
Oh my
gore
gosh.
is just, and I'm not even like a gore hound, but when it looks good, it looks good.
Yes,
So
it's still in that era before CGI was normalized, so you have so many practical makeup effects. Like, I'm just a nerd for that stuff. And you know what? I don't know if you remember Santos again, that very first death of the crew. He was exploded, so he was like on kind of on fire and burned when his ghost or vision, you never know if this is actually the ghost or if it's a vision that Jack is causing with a lot of this stuff, but his ghost or a vision of Santos comes back, and you know who he reminds me of is the torn prince from 13 Ghosts. He has some of his hair gone, he's burned on this side, and I was like, huh. And now knowing that it sounds like some of the same team is behind that, I would be so curious. We'll have to look up and see if the makeup artists are the same, if there's any of them the same between the two films, because it wasn't perfectly the same. It wasn't a knockoff or a ripoff, but it just reminded me a little bit of 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, for sure.
And then obviously we're here at the end of the movie. Epps decides, you know what? Everyone's fucking dead. I don't give a fuck about this gold. I just don't want this to keep happening because all the souls are damned, all of them, including her families, they're damned. So what homegirl does, final epic battle with Jack, and she does this awesome maneuver. Where she basically what detonates, she manages to hit the detonator and explodes the ship. Jack
Yep.
explodes, the ship goes down, and talk about visually stunning, all of the spirits being freed. It's
Yes.
beautiful. That's part of what I love about the end of the 13 Ghosts is when the spirits are free. It's beautiful, it's uplifting. They get to move on into the afterlife because she destroyed the vessel. So it seems like there's his magic that he uses, his supernatural abilities, it seems very much related, tied in to these physical vessels. So because she destroyed that, they're all free. So even Katie, yay. So justice for Katie, that's a hashtag. I just made it
Justice for
up.
Katie.
It's like how many Katies are there though? We'll have to add something else then, maybe her last name if there is one. But do you remember the ultimate plot twist at the very end? This is so classic, so classic. I think of all the Freddy movies from the 80s. There's always that at the end, you're like, oh shit, he's still alive, you know?
Yes.
So do you remember that? Do you want to talk about that?
I do. So we Epps makes it back to shore via, I believe, another ship, and
Yep.
she's got medical care that shows up to take her, and another set of crew members are boarding a different ship, also with the gold, and one of those crew members is none other than Jack,
Yep.
who just gives her an eerie look and walks past her, and his reign of terror continues, which, you know, you would think maybe he would be tied to that one vessel, but nope. His spirit lives on.
It's clearly something about him or the demons or entities he works for, because this is, at least as far as we know, the third vessel that he has used to do this. So very nefarious, and I just think such a cool plot point, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat. There's awesome deaths, there's so many plot twists throughout the whole movie. And obviously Jack didn't die when he was exploded, which my partner Nikki brought up a good point. Because you know how some ghosts can kind of materialize themselves at certain parts if they need to. You got to wonder about that. Was that like all a vision when he was exploding and hurt and all this kind of stuff? Or like, is he wanting you to think he's dead so he can go and do this again? Like, I could see it being a vision, or maybe it is something like what Nikki said, where it's like he's materialized for these certain moments, maybe to make it believable that he's a person.
Well, I was gonna say this hit me as we were talking about it. I like that, I'm sure the temptation could have been there to, 'cause CGI was there. I'm sure there would have been the temptation to make a big CGI demon Jack or something, but I like that he stayed in this human manifestation because it kept it grounded. Same thing with 13 Ghosts. They were outlandish ghosts, but they were all practical people.
Yes, for sure.
And so I don't know. I feel like this is kind of just evil incarnate. You know, it just takes on whatever form it needs to, can be anywhere, and you know, always gotta, it's always gonna be ever present in the world.
Yep. You know why? Because humans are gonna be here. That's what I love about like what you're saying is what is the ultimate evil? Human beings. So why take another form when you can be the most evil form and take the form of a human? So, but
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's,
that's a wrap.
I almost said that's 13 Ghosts because we've been talking so much about
I
it, but this
know,
is
but
Ghost
now it
Ship.
makes sense because it's the same director. No wonder. No wonder. Because I was like, it must be the ghost vibes, but I just kept being reminded of 13 Ghosts throughout the whole movie. But now it makes sense. It probably has a lot of the same team, definitely the director. Because, once you get a team of people together, just like we have in Charleston with the films and the shows and stuff we're doing, once you get a good team of people together, that's worth its weight in gold, and you want them on all of your projects. So we'll definitely have to do a deep dive. Maybe check out some follow-up on our Midnight Terrors podcast Facebook group. So maybe we
Yeah.
can post some of this stuff. I want to look up the makeup team and just see how much these two movies have in common, because that is fascinating to me that this director, those are on his only two movies he directed. So that's
So
super cool. And
crazy.
I want to find this person too. I'm serious. I want to find them, track them down. And I'm like, we're your biggest fans. So
Yeah,
can you please come on the show?
we'll have to get our Katie back on to talk to him
Oh
as
yeah.
well.
Oh yeah. She'd be pissed at me if I had the director of 13 Ghosts on and didn't invite her. So
For sure.
but yeah,
Yeah, there's.
I think that this was the most organized I've ever been too. I usually feel like when we're talking about movies, I'm like jumping to whatever in the world my brain, squirrel brain, I'm like this. And I was like, you know what? How about go in order of the movie? Wouldn't that be nice for the listeners to like for it to like be organized maybe? So
There
I
you
just want to
go.
pat us on the back for that. So
There we go. Well, you gotta go with the flow, you know?
you do.
Also, I want to point out that I can't tell if you're doing it on purpose, but I just want to believe that you are with the puns, because you said when you find a good team, it's worth that weight in gold. And
Oh my gosh.
I
No, I'm just that magical, Kevin. It's
I
natural for me. Look at
love it.
me. Oh, no wonder I'm good on a mic. It just comes out of me. I'm not even trying.
But you know,
But
this movie has an enduring fan base when it got a special edition collector's edition release from Shout Factory. Like, there is
heck
a
yeah.
fan base for this movie.
There is. Yeah, it really with 13 Ghosts too, I feel like movies like this, they kind of fly under, even though it did well theatrically, it grossed a decent amount. Still just you know how horror movies are, they're just not appreciated by critics, so it's very harshly judged. Y'all, this isn't a Broadway show. This isn't a drama. We're not going for an Oscar. Just enjoy the scenery, enjoy the creepy deaths. It's fun, it's a wild ride, and I want to leave it with this one last thought. If you love action, from the very freaking beginning, man, it is just, it feels like an action movie too to me. I was like, whoa, there's explosions and there's this and that. Oh man, he fell through the floor. Like, it's just constant, it's action packed.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way to end it. And thank you for bringing this one back into my life. I will
Yes.
definitely revisit more frequently. It's just fun. And you know, I'm all about art in horror, as we all are. But sometimes I just want to have fun. I don't want to think too much. I just want to have a good, and this is just a fun ghost story.
It's an easy watch. It's an easy watch.
And I want to
So,
emphasize fun. You brought up the point
yes.
of not Oscar worthy, you know, not trying to be like a work of art, just fun. And I think that is what sets us apart from a lot of people is, sure, our brains are gonna probably focus on things, but at the end of the day, my meter is, did I have fun watching it?
Yeah, for sure.
And I definitely do with this one. And I,
And
but I go in looking to have fun as well. I don't want to go in, man, this is gonna be bad.
yeah, absolutely. So quick question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you have your April pick for Spooky Bestie series? Because it is your turn. I'm the one who picked Ghost Ship. So do you have an April pick, or is that to be determined?
No, I think I landed on one. And I had a few kicking around in my head. I think I'm gonna save one of the other ones for later, but I put it in our text. Do we wanna say it right here, what it is?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's give a spoiler so you can look forward to it. And you can always watch it in advance if you want to follow along with us throughout the show.
Sure. I think I have landed on one that I have also only seen once within the last couple years, but it was so fun and one that I think is kind of similar to the vein of the movies we've been watching. And I don't know if you have ever seen this one, but if you haven't, I think it's going to be a fun watch and a fun chat. I have selected 1998's Urban Legend.
Oh yeah, I remember this being on TV as a kid all the time. It honestly felt like an urban legend. It was one of those movies that I had because I was born in 89, okay? So this, I'm not even 10 years old at this point. So I remember it's one of those movies that I know I saw so many times, probably way before, that's the theme, way before I ever should have seen it. So I was like, what's that movie? What's that movie that I had this memory of? And then I realized later in life it was Urban Legend. But guess what? I haven't watched it since I was probably that age. So I am ecstatic to revisit this movie.
Sweet. Well, it's another star-studded cast. It's another fun watch. Some fun cameos in there. And yeah, I just think that there's a lot of gems in the 90s and the 2000s that I think people forget about, and I think this is one of them. So
Awesome.
look forward to Urban Legend as the next Spooky Bestie series pick.
Stellar pick. I'm really excited about that. All right, is it time to do our plugs, our
It
shameless plugs before
is.
we hang up?
Are we still are they still shameless plugs? Like, are
Maybe
we?
not. Maybe not.
I
We're
think it's just
just
it's in our nature at this
Yeah,
point.
it's just who we are. We got to support our community, which just happens to include ourselves. We can't not be part of our own community. So,
This is true. Would you like to go first?
you know what? This was my pick, so I'll let you go first.
Oh. Super simple here. But on the MTP side, we do have another live event coming out, or coming up, which is going to be a real special one, Friday, April 25th at Frothy Beard from 7 to 9:30. We are talking books to movie adaptations, horror books to movies. So be on the lookout for the event page with that. But this is a really special one because we are partnering with our friends in the Charleston Society of Horror, which is the local horror book club. We are super excited. We've actually got the head of that group, Stephanie, as our guest co-host for that event. She's actually picked the movies for us. We're hoping to see a lot of faces from the Charleston Society of Horror there with us. And it's just going to be a really fun crossover. We've really loved getting to know the Society of Horror. They're such a great group of people. And so we're very excited. So Friday, April 25th at Frothy. And then there will be many more events coming. We have all of our dates booked for the rest of the year. And then, MTP is gonna keep on going. Be on the lookout for more Spooky Bestie series episodes, one every single month. And if you want to find us on socials, you can get in touch with us via Facebook, which is Midnight Terrors Podcast. That is also the name of our Facebook group, Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can talk with Jules and I and all of our friends and family in there. And you can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. Please send your movie picks over. If you're listening and you want to hear us talk about something on the show that you're a fan of, we would love to celebrate that with you. So feel free to share. And then also you can check out our Linktree Midnight Terrors Podcast, which has our T Public store. If you would like to pick up some cool merch over there. And that's MTP. Jules, what the hell is CAF up to right now?
Oh man, way too much, but here we go. We'll try. Okay, so this Friday at Terrace Theater, that's April 4th, we have a Rocky Horror theme show. It is Ninja Turtles. We're ecstatic about that. It's going to be super silly and fun. So come on over to James Island and join us. And then later this month, on the 26th of April, we have Shakespeare Night over at Itinerant Literate Books. So we're going to be reading Shakespeare. There's going to be sword fighting. I'm going to be reading Sylvia Plath, which I'm really, really really excited about. She's one of my favorites. No surprise there. Very depressing and dark. So that's my style. Love her. And then we have Atomicon, which MTP, we're also going to be there. I think we might be helping out with who knows what costume contest. We have Princess Bride, we have podcast panels. We're going to be there with the book club that we just mentioned earlier. So all sorts of fun stuff. May 3rd and 4th is Atomicon and our Princess Bride show there at the con. And then I'll go ahead and mention A Midsummer Night's Dream. If you guys like Shakespeare, we're going to be performing that June 24th and 28th. The first show will be at Itinerant Literate Books, and the second one will be at the Goose Creek Amphitheater, Joseph Danning Amphitheater. Brand new. It's absolutely stunning. We had a show there this past weekend. It's going to be free, the one at the amphitheater. So please come out if you want a night of free fun. It's an awesome Shakespeare play. We'd love to have you guys. And as always, CAF and MTP, we are an inclusive, diversified, safe space for absolutely everybody. So if you need a family, a chosen family, if you need friends, if you need an ear, whatever you need, come find us. Any place that you see MTP, CAF, or any of our affiliates like Southern Screams, Atomicon, Charleston Society of Horror, all of these different groups that we promote, they're all inclusive and a safe space for you guys. I love talking about this movie today. I hope we get to see you guys soon, especially at the event at the end of this month on April 25th. And with that being said, have an awesome night or day or whenever you're listening to this. I hope your day is going well.
Yes, and I agree with Jules there. The world can be dark and scary, but we're all in all of this together. And I hope that MTP, CAF, Society of Horror, Southern Screams, any of us here, whether you're in Charleston or somewhere else, if you're tuning into our stuff, hopefully we can be a safe haven for you in some way, because that's what this is for all of us. You know, it's a place to be creative and connect with people and just feel safe and good and happy. And that's what we're all about. And Jules, I do it every episode, so you know it's coming. But I, of course, want to thank you for not only joining me for the episode and for picking this fantastic movie, but also just for all the work you do on a daily basis, personally and professionally, to, you know, just be a true light in the world, as well as in my own life. So thank you.
Well, right back at you. I'm thankful for you and everyone who's a part of these organizations. Couldn't do it without you. Until next time, urban legend coming your way fast.
All right, everybody. Well, that's the Midnight Terrors podcast. We love you all, and we will see you very soon. Peace.